The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 530. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest for this episode is an actor who has been very, very successful in the world of film and television, and even the stage. And so I'm very happy to sit down and chat with him. You may know him as Chief McNamara on the brand new show, Spider Noir. Of course, I'm talking about Randy Oglesby. Now, Randy has a very long list of credentials that we talk about only a mere fraction of them. As a matter of fact, we didn't really even talk about the films he's been in, such as Independence Day, Liar Liar, Patch Adams, The Lone Ranger, etc., etc. And so you're going to hear another episode of Randy sometime in the near future, because we just focus solely on his television work and his stage work that I feel kind of a little bit bad that I didn't fit in his success in the movie genre. But nonetheless, we are going to talk about, of course, Spider-Noir. We're going to talk about his role as President Jim Bragg on For All Mankind. Bill in the new show that's spun off from the movie of the same title, The Burbs. We're talking about his time on David E. Kelly projects, as well as the various different roles he's played in Star Trek universe as well. So it's going to be a great episode. So I want to not waste any time. I want to get right to it. But before I do that, I have to thank a few great sponsors of this podcast. First is the newest sponsor of the PVD Cast, Courtney 614 Deals. If you want great deals on women's clothing, health and beauty, fine china, other pop culture items, then you need to check out Courtney 614 Deals. You can find her on all those major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc. Simply look for Courtney 614 Deals. That's spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, 614 Deals. And if you pick anything up from her, just please let her know that you heard about her endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. Now for the old school sponsor, of course I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. World's Greatest Comics is your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies, you name it, they got it for your comic book fandom. So you need to check them out. And you could do so in person. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. And I'd like to thank both those sponsors for their support throughout the years. I really, truly do appreciate it. And so with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Randy Oglesby. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon, I'm sitting down with an actor who is currently known for a very, very big role in a very popular TV series that's going on right now. We'll talk all about that. I'm, of course, referring to Mr. Randy Oglesby. Randy, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, John.
Well, I talked about it. You have a role on the hit series, Spider-Noir, as Chief McNamara. Yeah. Can you maybe walk us through the process of how you landed that role?
Yeah, it was an interesting process. They wanted a self-tape. I mean, I suppose you know that a lot of the auditions now, ever since COVID, have been self-tape. You submit a tape,
yep.
sometimes you can ask for a Zoom interview, which I prefer, because you actually see the casting agent and or their assistant and read in person, and you know that you can read and they can give you notes and you can make adjustments, and it's just a little more personal. I prefer that when I can get it. Usually it's sometimes that's in demand and not everybody has the opportunity. So this was a tape submission. And normally I have a young woman that helps me with my tapes. I go to her studio and we tape there and work on stuff in it. But on this occasion, the sides were pretty brief. And I thought, you know, I can do this at home. And so I taped it at home with my wife with the camera and on the other side of the scene with me, reading with me. And we taped it at home and I submitted it and I got the job. It was pretty cut and dried.
Has that ever happened?
Yeah, I mean, I've occasionally gotten jobs that I've self-taped. That does.
Okay.
It's not rare, and a lot of people always do it at home. Some people have more of a home studio set up. I'm a little less finicky about that. How much technology you want to involve, you can get pretty sophisticated with that. I prefer to go in to see this young woman who tapes with me. She's an actress as well, and she knows the process, and she'll give me notes and we'll talk about the part. So it's a bit of a collaboration there. So that's the way that works these days.
Yes, I've heard about many actors and actresses doing self-tapes because, mm-hmm. yeah, as you mentioned, you know, 6 years ago we had the pandemic and that was how it was going to be. But I feel like it's probably for some folks more convenient to do it at their own leisure.
It is convenient. I think, it's an interesting thing. I think when you're in, I prefer if I can go into a room with people, I prefer that, because then you're bringing your whole self in there, your whole presence, your whole who you are physically and and on a tape, sometimes I think a lot of times somebody can make a really good tape, but then I felt in shows that I've done, that I've been working with actors who made a really good tape, but when they got on the set, it was a different situation, and they, you know, sometimes had a little trouble. But I think the self tape can, well, I think it can give, if you're self taping, it means you've got all the time you need to memorize and get it down and make choices. And sometimes I think you make all these personal choices, and a lot of times you're cast because of the choices you make, and that's what they want, is that performance. But then there are times you get into the filming process, you get the job, you're on the set, you're working with the director, and the director says, you know, let's do something a little different. And I've had the feeling sometimes I've been working with actors who weren't as nimble and as able to take that direction, because they were kind of locked into what they did. And you have to be ready to adjust and take a note and change things up if you have to. And I think sometimes this self-tape situation, you know, sometimes hides some defects that normally if you'd gone into the room and worked with people and they, you know, then they would have a better idea of what you're actually able to handle.
How has the experience been working on the set of Spider-Noir?
It was a very good experience. It was really interesting. I think each of the directors that worked got to do two episodes, which was great, because a lot of times doing episodic, I mean, you'll have a different director each time, and you don't really get to get a feel for them quite as well as when you're spend more time with them. And that was very nice. I met some very interesting directors. One whom actually played a part in my and I met her later when I did when I got that nice recurring part I had in The Burbs, which came out this year. Same director that worked on that, and and it was an interesting process. They're very careful about the script and how it got out. Sometimes I had to really dig around to find out, you know, the storyline, because, you know, my part I was in three episodes. I have a couple of scenes in the first two episodes. I have one really nice scene at the end because I played Chief McNamara. And I think I can, now that the show is out, I can talk about it freely. But Chief McNamara is basically in cahoots with the mayor. They're somewhat compromised by the Irish mobster, which is Brendan Gleeson. So they're sort of on the take. So my character, while I don't appear, I don't appear that much here and there. I have the one good scene later in episode 7. But in terms of a story, it's pretty key. Because I do control the police department and how the police operate and whether they show up at different situations, you know, is up to me. So it was interesting. The part was interesting in that sense. And on the set, you know, it was well run and great. You know, good DPs. The cameramen were terrific. You know, I love it. You know, the cameraman is such an important part for an actor, and if I can connect with the cameraman, and if I feel like they're plugged into what I'm doing and interested and keyed on what I'm doing and where I'm going with something, you get a feel for that. You know, it's fun to sense that, and you sort of feel like, well, I've got their support.
What challenges did the role have for you to get the performance that you wanted to out of the character of McNamara?
Well, you know, he's a man in a position of some authority, and he is appointed by the mayor in this situation. So I have a, you know, and yet there are times I'm at odds with the mayor. We're not in sync on where we should be going and how the police are going to deal with this gangster, which we should be, you know, we should be trying to apprehend. And here we are on a certain level enabling him. So I'm walking a bit of a thin line there. And that made that, particularly that long scene, the big scene I have with the mayor, that was part of the balancing act I have to do. I mean, I don't want to completely alienate the mayor. I want to sort of protect my authority and the what power I have. I want to guard it. But and I have to respect him to an extent, but on the other hand, I am opposed. You know, we're not on the same page. So there it was. You know, it was a challenge. You know, it's human. It's the human condition. It always comes back to the human condition. Whatever complication and complexity that may entail.
Were you or are you a fan of the Spider-Man universe?
I enjoy the Spider-Man universe. I'm, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I guess one of the, you might say, ironies of my career, I've done a lot of Star Trek. I've done my share of supernatural stuff. I look back at my resume, and there was a series on Fox years ago called Point Pleasant, and I play a Catholic priest who eventually becomes a zombie. So I've done my share. Yeah, I've done, you know, I was in Independence Day, the movie, which was great fun. So I've done my share of that sort of thing. But I came out of theater, and it's specifically kind of classical theater. I studied at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco and in the late 70s, and then went on to work with the acting company for 5 years. And you know, we were hired for 9 months and I think I did 40 plays in the 7 years that I was in San Francisco associated with ACT. So I had a big background in sort of classical theater and, you know, highbrow stuff. So when I got to LA, I mean, suddenly I'm dealing with these things that are a little more on the entertainment side and the not fantasy, but I came to appreciate those kind of projects gradually over the years of just doing them, because those were the jobs I got hired to do. You know, I ultimately came to really enjoy and appreciate the Star Trek, which, as you probably know, I did all from Next Generation all the way through Enterprise I worked all of those shows. I did seven roles over those years that I worked on those shows, and really enjoyed it. Really appreciated the crews I worked with. Star Trek had that was a wonderful gig because you were working with crews that were devoted to it. That it was a regular job for them. The makeup people, the sound, lights, camera, they were great to work with. You working with them, you know, doing enough roles with them and time and time again, you got a sense of how, when you're making television and film, if you get a sense of an ensemble, and I don't mean just among the actors, but I mean an ensemble among the crew and the actors all working toward the same goal, it's pretty exciting to feel it come together. And as an actor, you start to feel they're supporting you. I mean, they're your audience in a way once you get into, you know, a character. And I had, I think, 11 episodes of Enterprise. And by the end of it, there's a scene, my death scene, where another character is going to murder me. And it was fun because it was in my character's office or sort of chambers. And normally there'd be maybe 5 or 6 or 8 people in there to film the scene. And I think there were probably 20 people there because they all wanted to see the death scene. They all wanted to see, well, what happens to this character? And it's quite gruesome, you know. There's a large knife involved, and so you feel like, you know, I did the show, I did For All Mankind recently. I play in season 3. I play a governor who becomes vice president, and they brought me back in season 5 to be the president, which was a great deal of fun. In season 5, there was most of my scenes in season 5 as the president, I'm standing in front of the presidential seal addressing the nation at a podium. And we had one of those scenes. It was a fairly good monologue and a little bit tricky. It was, you know, you had to be pretty sharp to not only just remember it, but to make sense out of it. But it was good writing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about the writing. But I did it several times, and the director said, "Oh, that's good." And he finally said, "You know, I think we've got it." He said, "Do you want one more take just for the heck of it?" And you know, sometimes I feel like I do, and sometimes I don't. But this time I said, "Yeah, let me have one more take." Well, the end of the little scene, when they had shot all the previous takes, it basically I'm staring out at the toward the camera, and it ends, and they say cut. Well, I always felt like when I did that last scene, I kept thinking, I've got to put a button on this somehow. And so we do the take, and at the very end, instead of just stopping and waiting till they say cut, I turned to my left and walked off. And that put the button on it, and everybody on that set broke into applause. And yeah. it was just, you had this, oh, yeah. I nailed it, and they all said, oh yeah, that's what you need to do to get out of that scene. So it was, so you get a sense of camaraderie, you get a sense of support. Again, with Star Trek, you know, that was always a very strong, you know, that was always present. So I've enjoyed working in these worlds. I did I guess it was back in 2021, I did a WandaVision. I play a doctor who's overseeing a pregnancy and delivering a child. Anyway, that was a great. I enjoyed that a lot. I worked. I'm trying to think of who I should always pull this up so I can remember. But it was fun. So I've enjoyed working in those worlds, in those fantasy kind of science fiction universes.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Randy for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies, you name it, they got it for your fandom. So, you need to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can find them online. WGComics.com is the web address. And they're very active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WG Comics.
And you actually, if I remember, and yes, I was going to mention the Star Trek trivia, but you also have appeared in almost every single David E. Kelly project. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. You know, I have to go back because that was a while back. But, you know, all the, you know, what I think was West Wing Kelly, Boston Public. I'm trying to think.
Boston Legal, I think. Allie McBeal.
Boston Legal. Yep. I did that. You know, started back. I'm not sure if L.A. Law was David Kelly, but it was all those shows were. You know, I mean, I've done a lot. I've done a lot of them. I have to go back and look at my resume to jog my memory. So yeah, you always knew you were going to get good writing, and you were going to get some good comedic writing on that. I remember one of the first. I'm not sure if David Kelly was L.A. Law, but it seems like it was in that universe anyway. That was one of the funniest parts I had, and was I did an L.A. Law, and I played an insurance adjuster who is being tried for filling out false claim forms to support his dominatrix. And Susan Day was my attorney. And the character's name was Leonard Nip, a.k.a. Little Lenny the Worm. And I had just met the woman who would become my wife. And this episode was the first time that her family saw me playing this character. And, you know, the harder they were on me at the trial, the more I liked it. And at the very end of the episode, I've been charged, and I'm going to be sentenced. And Susan Day has to say, "Your Honor, my client would like to address the bench." She says it quite reluctantly. And the judge says, "Yes, please go ahead, Mr. Nip." And I start out saying, "Your Honor, I've been bad. I deserve to be punished." And so I finished this ridiculous monologue. Just over my shoulder comes, I hear a person come up and talk to me, and it's a large blonde prison matron. And I just stop and I turn and I look at her and I go, "Oh my." And they take me off to prison. anyway, maybe it's hard to make this work over the phone, but it was such a funny moment. But it's a funny part. It was great. I always loved doing those shows because there was often a really nice comedic edge to everything, sort of, that lightened all the serious legal or whatever drama.
Well, going back to For All Mankind, mm-hmm. the basic premise is that the USSR won the space race in the 60s.
Correct.
How much of the actual history of the space race did the writers of the show write into it? Do you know offhand if it was a lot or if it was just highlighting and there?
You know, they pretty much create a space race because that, you know, it's they called it alternative history. What if the Russians beat us to the moon, which precipitated this decades-long space race? So everything else basically is invented from there. So it starts out with a completely different historical reality. I think they incorporated some of the technological, how the technology advanced over the years, and you see that evolve. But politically and the rest is, you know, it's, I think it's just, it's made up. It's okay. Drama.
Well, we also need to, go ahead.
I will say that the funny thing is, in terms of the alternative history, when I am elected president, I do it because I beat Al Gore. I don't know how they got Al Gore. I think there's a clip of Al Gore in it. I don't know if how that worked out, that they got his permission or if he did it. I don't know, but that was kind of funny. That was fun.
let's talk about another project that you mentioned earlier on here, The Burbs, which is, I was surprised to know that it's kind of based on the Tom Hanks film from 1988 or 89 or whatever. What was your experience like on this set?
It was a very good experience. It's really, really nice, really good cast, good, solid people. Kiki Palmer was great to work with. And, again, I need to pull up the cast list so I can remember everybody's name. But they had an interesting, they changed directors. I think we had a different director pretty much every time. But they had a real interesting mix of men, women directors, white, black directors, you name it. It was really, really fun in that way and nice in that way. And you're getting different creative kind of input and views of how things go. But it was a really good collaboration. I always felt like, if I had ideas, they were welcome, and really wonderful wardrobe people, some great, and we shot at the back lot there at Universal. So it was a really nice gig. I live in West Hollywood, so I could be there in 15 minutes and park my car. And, it was a lovely, for an actor in town, it was a great gig. We had all our trailers up there on the lot, not too far from the, we shot in one of the neighborhoods up there, and there's a house that figures in the story very prominently. There's a kind of slightly dilapidated old mansion type place that figures into the story. And that was actually the house that the Munsters used.
Oh, okay.
So it was cool. You're in one of those neighborhoods. Those neighborhoods are full of all kind of film history, and they're artifacts to many, many productions going back many years. And it's always fun to be, in on something like that. You kind of feel that history as you're working, that it's been used and well used for many years.
Okay. So you mentioned that you originally started off more in plays rather than TV or a film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, you also directed and produced some plays. So
out
of doing the acting and then the producing and the writing, which of those three did you like the most?
Well, I also did some directing, and I really think I like the directing the best.
Why?
I mean,
is that?
I enjoy the acting. Pardon?
I said, why is that?
Well, I think because, I think I work well with people, and I enjoy working with people. I enjoy directing. I enjoy working with actors and directing actors. I mean, if you have good actors, they're smart. They've got their own ideas about things. And as long as they're willing to listen to your ideas, and that's part of the pleasure of it. I think, it's all storytelling, and I've done a lot of it, and I've seen a lot of it. And I just feel competent on that level of, I remember back, when I came here in 82 to LA, I left about the same time, as several other, quite a large group of other people from ACT came down here, and we created, I was a founding member of a little theater company called the Pacific Resident Theater Ensemble, which is still exists in Venice. And through the 80s and early 90s, I worked a lot, did a lot of free theater, and 90 seat waiver that we call it. Equity has a contract that allows you to work without being paid. And produced plays, and I wrote one play that got produced, and I directed a few plays. Directed a couple of Keith Radin plays in the early 90s, which I really enjoyed, and I played a part in them. I would be running the sound and the lights in the back, and then I'd run backstage and put on my wardrobe and come out and do the role, and then finish, and then go back and run the lights and the sound again. So you're doing a little bit of everything. You learn a lot about theater and storytelling when you're working on that level. You're not making much money, but you're keeping your craft alive, and you're keeping your creative juices flowing even in between television gigs and film gigs.
So would you say that attitude that you had to continue on and you know, never say die attitude to reaching your goals. Mm-hmm. Would you say that mm-hmm. that was something that was instilled in you as a child or as a young man?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I was a beneficiary of two loving parents that were successful in their own worlds. I was lucky to have an upbringing that supported and nurtured me in positive ways. I didn't have a lot of demons to contend with on that level. And you know, when I went to college, I went to college at the University of Virginia, and I went originally in I thought I was going to go into medicine, and I was in pre-med. I'd done a lot of science in high school and was pretty good at it, particularly biology. And I had a very bad semester in college, 4 F's and a D, flunked out, had to go home to Memphis to live for the spring. And but it was during the Vietnam War, and I got as far as being getting a physical. I nearly got drafted. And then I got back into summer school and took a, for some reason, I took a theater course. I'd done a couple of plays in high school, musicals, and enjoyed it just for fun. I had no idea about being an actor. Anyway, I take this theater course back at the University of Virginia, and I got involved in theater. And next thing I know, I decided I wanted to be an actor. And you know, once I made up my mind, since I'd given up the idea of medicine, you know, I had no goal, I had no career path. Once I landed on the acting, you know, route, I went pretty hammer and tongs, you know, and I was fortunate, you know, I would get cast. I got cast. And at one point I was in New York driving a cab, and I was a bicycle messenger for a couple of years in New York in the early 70s, and kind of living close to the bone in the East Village. And I had to be pretty determined, and you know, but I studied acting. I would audition for a little project here and there, and I would get cast. And so, you know, but there were times when I wasn't acting, I would not tell anybody I was an actor. A lot of times I would have straight jobs. I didn't even want them to know I wanted to be an actor, because I really kind of didn't want them to think, well, I'm only doing this temporarily. You know, I didn't want it to reflect on what they were doing. I worked with bricklayers for a while. I was a hod carrier, which was an incredibly intense, very demanding job. I mean, I did everything. I carried blocks and bricks and made cement and had to keep up with the bricklayers. And, you know, I didn't want them to think that I was just slumming at this, because it seemed to me it was disrespectful. So when I wasn't acting, I never claimed that I was an actor. And eventually I was able to do it and make money, and to the point where, yes, I feel like now I can legitimately claim that I am an actor. I've been an actor for a while, and I can lay claim to that title. Anyway, that was kind of, you know, the early days into, but you got to be single-minded about it, and you can't get discouraged. But you also, I suppose for some people, you get to the point where you're not getting hired, you're not getting jobs, you're not getting that feedback. I think you have to listen to that too. And I was just very fortunate. I kept working. I kept getting the gig now and enough, and again, enough to say, yeah, I'm going to keep doing this. So, and eventually I think I was in my early fifties before I finally kind of relaxed and thought, you know what, I've been doing this a long time. I've been regularly working a long time. It'll probably keep going, you know, it'll continue. So I was able to, you know, kind of relax a little bit in terms of how I thought of the big picture.
Okay. Well, just got a couple more questions for you, Randy. The first one that I'm just going to throw it out there, because, you know, obviously you've had 7 different roles in the Star Trek universe. Have you ever been invited to a Star Trek convention?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You have? Okay. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I did conventions for a while. I should probably still do them now. I mean, it's very lucrative. And I, you know, you basically sell 8x10s. To the fans as they come by with your autograph. And there was one I went with, an interesting story with Star Trek. In the episode I mentioned where I'm murdered by one of the other characters, That character was played by a fellow that I was on Broadway with. His name is Scott McDonald. And Scott was Scott was a big Star Trek fan. He loved Star Trek. He even wrote an episode, a spec episode that I think he submitted. But he was playing my adversary in that episode. And Scott and I we went to a couple of conventions together, and we had an 8x10 of his character, who was this reptilian, leaning over my dying face, brandishing this large Bowie knife covered in blood. And I'm looking up at him, you know, breathing my last. And I'll tell you, we sold a lot of those pictures.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. I got to tell you, it one of the conventions, I remember seeing the original Captain Kirk.
William Shatner.
Shatner. I saw Shatner. I'll never forget this. It was such a funny moment. It was early. It was in the morning when the convention was just beginning. And I see Shatner walking into the convention hall with this, like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, with this group of fans trailing behind him. It was just, and he was loving it. He was just loving it. It was so charming to see that. And I've always thought that's William Shatner. You know, he loves the gig, and the fans love him. And, you know, it's kind of why one of the reasons it's fun to do the conventions, because the fans show up at your table where you've got your pictures, and they'll be telling you about these parts you've done that you don't even remember anymore. So it's a great bunch of fans, and it really does make it fun to be there. But yeah, I've done the conventions.
All right. Do you have any upcoming projects that you can talk about?
Well, it's a pretty lean time right now in Hollywood. I mean, I don't know if you read the trades, or, you know, even the LA Times had a big thing about, you know, prop houses, wardrobe houses having to shutter their doors. There's a dearth of production right now. Maybe it's going to pick up. You know, we got the tax credits from the state government finally, long overdue, so that we can be a little more competitive. But there's been a long period of attrition and work going everywhere else in the country, and now everywhere else in the world practically. But I do have The Burbs is coming back, and they picked it up for another season. So I think we're going to start filming, you know, later this year.
Okay.
Yeah, which cool. I'm looking forward to, because, you know, my storyline was in The Burbs was really fun, and it picked up as the season progressed. And I have a little love affair in it that I'm curious. Julia Duffy played my partner in that. And a funny thing about that, Julia Duffy was in the first television show that I ever filmed, in Bob Newhart. And I had a scene with her in that show. And it was great. It was kind of a great kind of, great that the wheel comes back around, and I'm working with her again on The Burbs, and we actually have a little romance, which it'll be interesting to see if and how they continue that in the next season.
All right. Well, Randy, do you have a website or social media or anything like that where fans can follow you and see what you're doing and what you're into?
Yeah, sure. I have randyoglesby.com. is my website, randyoglesby.com. And I don't keep a, I mean, I keep it up now and then. You can see my pic, you know, I've got a pretty good selection of pictures and some video. I'm going to be posting some new video that I have now of all my new projects, which I need to get to work and get that up online. That's probably, and imdb.com has, I think I have my, my demo reel is on there, and you can see, again, it's Randy Oglesby, RANDYOGLESBY, at IMDb. And you can see, you know, my photos and pictures of this and that. I have quite a few stage photos in that. And on my website, I also have pictures from Star Trek and pictures from, film and stage. So you can get a little sample of all that.
All right. With that, okay. Go ahead, Randy. Do you have anything else you want to say real quick?
No, just thanks, John. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I always enjoy this.
Well, thank you for stopping by and chatting with me as well. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Randy Oglesby, talking about his various different TV and stage roles that he's had over his long and lengthy career. And as I said at the beginning of the episode, I'm going to have Randy come back on in a few months, and we're going to talk about all the film work that he has done, because he's been in some really big productions, and I feel bad that we just ran out of time. We didn't get a chance to talk about those endeavors. So keep your eyes open for that. And maybe you'd like to tell me what you thought about the episode. Well, there's a couple different ways that you can get in touch with me. First of all, you can find me over on Threads, Instagram, and Facebook. Just search for @PVDcast. If you'd like to send me an email, you can do that as well. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. And if you want, you can also find me on Twitter. I'm still over there under my personal handle of @PVDMVP. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about the show, where they can hear it. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode. But you can also find it on all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting outlet or app, go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while you're doing that, if you like what you hear, how about rating and reviewing? It helps me out in the algorithm and drives me up the charts. And it's super important for both myself and for those podcasting outlets and apps to know that you're listening. So if you could do that, I would greatly appreciate it. And while you're also there in your favorite podcasting outlet or app and you're tinkering around with some stuff, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. But there's even another way that you can hear every single new episode, and that is through the Facebook page, @PVDcast, where every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a little kind of live broadcast of the week's episode. So there's three easy ways that you can hear the show, PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.